So today I'm going to talk about something that sounds on the surface rather abstruse. I'm going to talk about relative time and absolute time. And I'll start with a koan. I tried to find it before coming out here for the Teisho. I couldn't quite locate it, but I remember the crux of it. And the koan goes like this. A monk asks a Zen master, "What is the fixed and unchanging principle?" And the master answered, "Moving." And then the monk countered with, "What if it's moving?" The master said, "You cannot see the fixed, unchanging principle." Is this fixed, unchanging principle? What is it? This very essential, fundamental thing. Why is it moving? What does that mean? And why, when it's moving, can't it be clearly perceived? Now, if we were to view this in terms of time, we may perhaps be able to sink our teeth into it. Now, physicists are brilliant people. I like to hearken to their thought experiments, their discoveries. Quite amazing. One thing, though, that perhaps I don't know as much as they do about this particular issue, but I suspect they are missing something very critical. And the reason that they're missing it is that this cannot do anything for them. It can't achieve anything. It can't create anything, in a sense, itself. Just like the rest of us, physicists are quite attached to changes, to what is moving. That's where bread gets baked, so to speak. So they talk about time, and I alluded to this during the last Teisho about this discovery, this theory of relativity by Einstein, where space and time are inseparable. It is one thing, one so-called continuum, one fabric. Now, Einstein looked deeply into time. This was a big part of his theory. One of the things that he said, which seemed so puzzling, is that as we approach the speed of light, our clock goes slower and slower and slower, relative to an observer. So that when we perceive photons that are going at the speed of light, in a sense their clock is stopped. Their clock does not move. In other words, they do not age. So at the time of the singularity where we all started, every single center of the universe was at that center. When things spread out, and the leading edge were the photons going at the maximum speed possible, the speed of light, 180,000 miles per second. That leading edge from the standpoint of the center where you are right now. Time has never moved. The clock has stopped. Now, Einstein didn't say there was no time. He said the clock has stopped. The The other thing he said was that in a gravitational field, the clock slows down. This is actually the basis for global positioning satellites, GPS. It would not be possible to pinpoint, to triangulate the location of any object within, let's say, 150, 200 feet without Einstein's theory of relativity and his understanding of time. Because when you put a satellite up in the air, particularly one with a clock, the clock in that satellite is going to run a little faster than the clock on the Earth. A tiny bit faster. But enough to make an enormous difference when you triangulate positions on Earth. So the way that GPS works is there's an Earth-based clock and there's a clock in the satellite. They're both highly, highly accurate, atomic-style clocks. And the slight difference in time tells you, through complicated mathematics, your precise location. Now, what if you were to increase gravity? Your clock slows down further and further and further. And the only time there was maximum gravity throughout the entire universe, not just in a black hole, was at the time of the very beginning, the singularity. So at the singularity, you might say with quotes around it, the clock stopped, was stopped. There was no movement of time. But can you say there was no time? What is the movement of time? The movement of time can only be seen through form. That's what a clock is, it's form. Ticking away at a certain regular interval so that it becomes useful to us. It's not that a clock that would tick irregularly, for example, instead of it would tick. In a way like a heart in atrial fibrillation. Medical school were told that a heart in atrial fibrillation beats irregularly, irregularly. That's the definition of atrial fibrillation. Now a clock beating irregularly, does that not have time? So the point I'm making here is that time is measured arbitrarily, for our useful purposes, by something changing in a regular fashion. So it's through change that we perceive time. It's through change that we perceive time. What kind of time? Relative time. Relative to what? Relative to this moment and then the next moment, which leaves a trace in your memory. And then you compare. And through comparison, you feel that time has passed. Now, if there's something you particularly don't like, the time that passes seems to go so slow and torturesome, because a comparison is continually made to how it ought to be, but how it isn't. And moment by moment, as Shakespeare said, time moves at its petty pace. Forget the exact quote. I think he said something like, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow moves at its petty pace. But what if you are totally absorbed in this moment, completely absorbed? Time goes very fast in that way, psychological time. Goes very fast. So coming back to this time, so physicists are very concerned with this relative time, and this is why they say that when the photon exited, was created by the Big Bang, relative to the center, where you always are, the clock stopped. Relative, that's relative time. But what about for the photon? Think about it now. As Zen students, we should be able to put ourselves in a flower. we should be able to see ourselves in a cloud, smell ourselves in the waft of incense. So why couldn't we be a photon? Now, from the photon's perspective, looking back at the singularity, moving at the speed of light, the singularity's clock is stopped. How interesting. So relative to a photon, your clock is stopped. What is this saying? Does it mean you have run out of time? Does it mean time was destroyed for you? Physicists don't contemplate this aspect very much because it's not useful to them. Let me read something to you. This is Basui. So here's what Basui, this wonderful, I believe 14th century Zen master, said. If you would free yourself of the sufferings of samsara, you must learn the direct way to become a Buddha. This way is no other than the realization of your own mind, with a capital M. Now, what is this mind? It is the true nature of all sentient beings, that which existed before our parents were born, hence before our own birth. It was even there at the singularity, I inserted those words, which presently exists unchangeable and eternal. So it is called one's face before one's parents were born. This mind is intrinsically pure. When we are born, it is not newly created. When we die, it does not perish. It has no distinction of male or female, nor has it any coloration of good or bad. It cannot be compared with anything. So it is called Buddha nature. This unchanging thing, this fixed, unchanging principle. What is it? The master said, moving. How puzzling. When something moves maximally, that is at 186,000 miles per second, when it's moving at the speed of light, relative to me, its clock is fixed and unmoving. Its clock is stopped. What is this stopped clock? What I will call absolute time. What is absolute time? Now, if the clock disappeared, there'd be no photon. There would be no me. There would be no universe. There'd be nothing at all, with nothing to even know there's nothing. This Paul Tillich question, how is it that there is something rather than nothing at all? Because of absolute time. Absolute time is the space within which the world is allowed to manifest, so to speak. Now I'm going to read you something else, because we're going to have to go into this very carefully. This is by a wonderful, some say the most brilliant of all Japanese Zen masters. He was from the, I'll tell you precisely here, 13th century, and his name was Eihei Dogen. Now yesterday when we chanted the lineage, he was in the lineage. When Chan moved from China to Japan It was Dogen who brought it there. Dogen died relatively young, and he had a brief period of teaching, maybe about 25 years. During that time, he wrote a great treatise called the Shobogenzo. And this was what some say is the most abstruse, most difficult, only because of the problem of being attached to relative time, of the Shobogenzo, and he entitled it Being Time. And it starts with a quote from a Tang Dynasty master, Yakusan. So this is the quote. An ancient Zen master said, "Being time stands on the topmost peak and in the utmost depths of the sea. Being time is three heads and eight elbows. Being time is a height of 16 or 18 feet. Being time is a monk's staff. Being time is a hosu, which is a stick carried by the master that has like a mane on it, used to wipe away flies. Being time is a hosu. Being time is a stone lantern. Being time is taro. Being time is jiro." These are just common names like Tom, Dick, and Harry. "Being time is earth. Being time is sky." Dogen starts with this being time. Being time, this absolute time. This time that is manifested in anything that is moving, but which itself is unmoving, just as Basui said, being time. I'll go on. And this is critical now to this. I want us to really contemplate this. So Dogen now goes into this wonderful comment by Yakusan. He said, "Being time," and that, by the way, is written here, being dash time. Remember, we talked about space dash time. Same thing. Being dash time means that time is being. Time is being. When the photon's clock is stopped, the photon still is. What time is that? Being time. Every existent thing is time. The 16-foot golden figure is time. He's talking about perhaps in his temple a big giant golden Buddha. The 16-foot golden figure is time. As it is time, it has the grandeur of time. Remember that poem by Richard, "The flower is enough." The blue sky breaking through clouds is enough. Each one of these has the grandeur of time. You must learn that it is 12 hours. This is how they used to talk in 12-hour segments, but I'll change it to 24 hours because it's more meaningful to us. You must learn that it is 24 hours of nowness. I'll say that again. You must learn that it, this 16-foot golden figure, is 24 hours of nowness. Three heads and eight elbows. This is like Avalokiteshvara with the three heads and the multiple arms. So three heads and eight elbows is time. Since it is time, it cannot but be identical with these 24 hours, this very moment, and everything is like that. The light on the floor, smell of incense, sound of the wind through the trees. Though we do not measure 12 hours, or I'll say 24 hours, as a long or short time. So now he's going into this relative time. This relative time, this long or short relative to whether I like something or don't like it, and when something occurs, and then leaving a trace in memory so that the next thing that happened is compared to the one before, you say, ah, time moved. Relative time. Time moved. Though we do not measure 24 hours as a long or short time, because you can't say whether it's long or short. It's all relative. For a child playing with a toy, it's very short. For someone sitting in zazen with their knees hurting at the beginning of a sitting, it's very long. Conversely, for a child, a week is a very long time. But for an adult, particularly the older you get, the more it goes by like a finger snap. So this is why he said, though we do not measure 24 hours as a long or short time, we still arbitrarily call them 24 hours. We call them that. It's just relative. The traces of the ebb and flow of time are so evident that we do not doubt them. Yet, though we do not doubt them, we ought not to conclude that we understand them. This is very, very important. The traces of the ebb and flow of time. There's a something said in Zen teaching called leaving no traces. Leaving no traces. But we leave traces. There are traces in our thoughts, traces in our memory. And these traces, we don't doubt them. They're evidence of something being. And yet we think we understand that as time. We think that's what time is in its entirety, the ebb and flow of time. This is where perhaps the physicists go a little wrong. Human beings are changeable, at one time questioning what they do not understand, at another time no longer questioning the same thing. So their former questionings do not always coincide with their present ones. And they have a sense that time has passed. Oh, I'm becoming more and more wise. The questioning alone, for its duration, is time. Let's talk a little bit now about duration. There actually is the shortest duration, if you want to call it that. This is because light is the limiting speed in the universe. Nothing can go faster than a photon, 186,000 miles per second. And if we are concerned with so-called relative time, and we measure something moving, a clock ticking, for example. Now let's go all the way down an atomic clock, the most accurate kind of clock, a vibration of a crystal vibrating at an extremely rapid rate. Now it can't vibrate faster than the restriction placed on the entire universe, which is nothing can go faster than the speed of light. So the movement at the speed of light over the shortest possible distance, which I won't go into, but which Max Planck called Planck length, the time it takes for a photon to traverse Planck length is called Planck time. That's the shortest possible duration. In other words, relative time does not become infinitely shorter and shorter and shorter. There's a point at which it can't get any shorter. The Buddha knew this. The Buddha called this a kasana, so-called thought moment, a thought moment. Shorter than that can't be. It can't be measured. If it can't be measured, then it really isn't, because remember now, what is real is what is observed, and if it can't be observed, it doesn't come into being. It would only be theoretical. It would be an idea in your mind. This is all about relative time. So he goes on and he says, human beings dispose themselves and construe this disposition as the world. This is just what we do. We dispose ourselves. In other words, we have a certain set of ideas, attitudes, beliefs. and project them onto the world. And then we see this as the world. So we see the world as passing time. You must recognize that everything, every being in this entire world is time. No object obstructs another, just as no time obstructs another. Thus, the initial orientation of each different mind towards the truth exists within the same time. And this is where it gets very difficult. Basically, what he's saying is there's a clock on the photon. There's a clock on the man in the spaceship. This is some of the thought experiments done by Einstein, and later, if you read the book A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking, Brian Greene wrote some books on this cutting-edge physics. But basically, the point is that every single object, or what would more correctly be called center in the universe, remember, each point in the universe is the center of the universe, according to relativity. So you are the center. For you, you have your clock. For me, I have my clock. Everyone has their clock. The mistake is we think our clock is everyone's clock. Our relative time is everyone's relative time. Every point in the universe has its own time. Therefore, no time obstructs any other time. But what is constant? What is fixed? What is unmoving? That's called absolute time. What do I mean? In my center of the universe, no matter what my clock says, it can only be now. In your center of the universe, no matter what your clock says, it can only be now. This now. We shared this now when we were all together at the singularity. There was only now. Remember, time didn't move. It was infinite gravity. Clock can't move. When a photon's going at the speed of light, its clock stops relative to me. But time doesn't go away. It just becomes absolute. Now, when we departed from ourselves, when there was space placed between us, but we each remained at the center of the universe, our relative clocks deviated from one another. But our absolute time has never changed. We can all here only be in this absolute time now. We all share now. Now. So, Dogen actually goes into this. He puts it this way. Just consider whether or not there are any conceivable beings or any conceivable worlds which are not included in this present time. If you are the ordinary person unlearned in Buddhism, upon hearing the words Arutoki, which is Japanese for at one time, you will doubtlessly understand that they mean at one time, that is, at one time, being appeared as three heads and eight elbows. That at one time being was a height of 16 or 18 feet, or that one time I waded through the river and at one time crossed the mountain. You may think that the mountain and that river are things of the past, that I have left them behind and am now living in this palatial building. They are as separate from me as heaven is from earth, you may believe. However, the truth has another side. When I climbed the mountain and crossed the river, I was time. Time must needs be with me. I have always been. Time cannot leave me. Go back to Basavi. This mind is intrinsically pure. Just replace mind with absolute time, or now. This mind is intrinsically pure. When we are born, it is not newly created, and when we die, it does not perish. When time is not regarded, we're back to Dogen here, when time is not regarded as a phenomenon which ebbs and flows, the time I climb the mountain is the present moment of being time. When time is not thought of as coming and going, this moment is absolute time for me. At the time I climbed the mountain and crossed the river, did I not experience the time I am in this building? Three heads and eight elbows is, in quotes, yesterday's time. A height of 16 or 18 feet is today's. But yesterday or today mean the time when one goes straight into the mountains and sees the 10,000 peaks. It has never passed. Three heads and eight elbows is my being time. It seems to be of the past, but it is of the present. A height of 16 or 18 feet is my being time. It appears to be passing, but it is now. Thus the pine is time, as is the bamboo, as is the flower, as is the blue sky breaking through the clouds, as is a waft of incense. One philosopher, I remember Richard quoting this, I think he may have been an ancient Greek, and I'm sure someone in the room knows who said this, but he put it this way, it is not in ideas, but in things. It, we could substitute for this absolute time or being time, is not in ideas, but in things. What does this mean? Remember, he said, a height of 16 feet, three heads and eight elbows. The time I went into the mountains, the time I waded across the river, the time I was sitting in the zendo, listening to a teisho, the time incense smell occurred. I'll move on to a different koan, which is very brief, and we won't comment on it very much. So this is koan number 62 from the Hekigan Roku. And the title of it is Umon's One Treasure. Remember what this ancient philosopher said. So Umon said to the assembled monks, between heaven and earth, through space and time, there is one treasure hidden in the mountain of form. Pick up a lamp and go into the Buddha hall. Take the temple gate and place it on the lamp. Take a lamp and go into the Buddha hall. Sit and fold your legs and do zazen intently. Turn the lamp in on itself. Go from relative time where memories stick and traces are left into absolute time, which is this frozen moment which has always been here, now, given to all things, the space in which the world is allowed to appear, and without which there would be nothing without even anything to know that there's nothing. Go into that space and take the temple gate and place it above, on top of, any idea, any thought. Do that with the incense smell. Do that with the sound of a bird. Do that with the feeling of your knees on the mat. This is being time. We'll end there today.